And looking at Jonah chapter 3 last week, we looked specifically at it from the viewpoint of Jonah, kind of the message that he gave and how that worked. This week, we're going to look more from the Ninevites' perspective and what it looks like to have revival come amongst us. And so look, read with me. I'm going to read out loud. You follow along. Jonah chapter 3. We're going to read the whole thing. Then the word of the Lord came to Jonah the second time, saying, "Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it the message that I tell you." So Jonah arose and went to Nineveh according to the word of the Lord. Now Nineveh was an exceedingly great city, 3 days' journey in breadth. Jonah began to go into the city, going a day's journey, and he called out, "Yet 40 days, and Nineveh shall be overthrown." And the people of Nineveh believed God. They called for a fast and put on sackcloth, from the greatest of them to the least of them. The word reached the king of Nineveh, and he arose from his throne, removed his robe, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat in ashes. And he issued a proclamation and published throughout Nineveh, "By the decree of the king and his nobles, let neither man nor beast, herd nor flock, taste anything. Let them not feed or drink water, but let man and beast be covered with sackcloth, and let them call out mightily to God. Let everyone turn from his evil way and from the violence that is in his hands. Who knows? God may turn and relent and turn from his fierce anger so that we may not perish." When God saw what they did, how they turned from their evil way, God relented of the disaster that he had said he would do to them. And he did not do it. So I remember I grew up in the Bible Belt down south, and every year we would have a revival. And what that meant was that we would have a week-long potluck dinner every night, Monday through Friday, and we would have a guest speaker preach at our church. And that was our revival. Maybe you grew up in a situation like that. And it was, to me, it was one of my favorite times of the year, because I just had to wait an hour to get potluck meals, like every all week. And Southern women know how to cook, and my gut has been part of me since those days, and I love it. But the thing is, we did that every year. And I do remember there were years where it seemed like God was moving and he used those events to really stir people up, and there were people who had not been in the church for a long time. Maybe never. All of a sudden, they started showing up on Sundays. And they got plugged in, and they began to believe. But I also know there are a lot of years where we would have those events, and that's what they were. It was just an event. And good Christians from other churches would come and hear these preachers, and then they would go back to the churches. What we see in Jonah chapter 3 is a real revival. From the greatest to the least, turning to God, believing in God, repenting, relenting of their sin, of their anger, of their violence. We are seeing complete and total social change because of a 5-word sermon in the Hebrew. God moved amongst them. That is my prayer for this neighborhood, that one day I just wake up and God, through like some random tweet or social media feed, like however he wants to do it, just people just start getting on their faces before the Lord, and all of a sudden we're going to be overwhelmed with people. Like, that's a good problem to have. And I would be, I'm stressed out about a lot. I would love to be stressed out about that. That's my prayer. So what does that take? Well, last week we saw it took the power of God moving amongst them. But what we also see from the Ninevites this morning is it takes taking God seriously. That phrase, "they believed God," initiated this radical shift and change in their demeanor and the way that they looked at God and the way they began to treat each other. And that's what I want us to focus in on this morning. Because when we take God seriously, it will produce serious change in us, and it will produce serious change in the world around us because of the way we begin to interact with it. Taking God seriously produces serious change. And I would say that for a lot of us, the flip side of that is true. When we do not take God seriously, we cannot expect Him to actually do serious work in us. He might do it against our will, but more often than not, He will give you up to your passions. And so I want us to look a little closer at Jonah 3. And there are two ways specifically from the outset that we see that the Ninevites take God seriously. And the first thing is they took God's judgment seriously. They took God's judgment seriously. So verse 4. Jonah called out, "Yet 40 days and Nineveh shall be overthrown." Now that's a summary statement there. It's the message God gave Jonah to preach. It's a message of judgment. And we can guess that it's more likely just a summary statement. But the reason that it's only that is they want us to know that that was the main emphasis of Jonah's message. God's coming. Verse 5. "And the people of Nineveh believed God. They called for a fast and put on sackcloth from the greatest of them to the least of them. And then the king of Nineveh, he arose from his throne, removed his robe, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat in ashes." They believed God would do what He said He would do. And so they took His judgment seriously, which means they took their sin seriously. You're not going to walk around the neighborhood seeing people sitting in sackcloth and ashes on purpose. Right? That's not like their life dream. You're not going to see people, very rarely if ever, have you met someone who is so grieved that they would take off their fine clothes and put on a burlap sack and just like moan and wail over their sin. But that is the image we have here. And it's this image that we see throughout the Old Testament of people mourning. It's like they're mourning their own death. You see this out of David when his infant son is dying. He is in sackcloth and ashes before the Lord. He is mourning before God, praying that God would do something. It's like they know we're as good as dead. We have no hope here. God's judgment is just. And honestly, if we're going to be serious here, the fear of that judgment is what is moving them. And we all know fear is a huge motivator. I mean, we just got out of a really tense political season, and we can all say, like, I'm glad that it's over because I don't have to watch, you know, every other commercial be a political ad about how the other person's the worst person in the world. But you notice how all those political ads, they kind of harp on our fear. Like, this guy hates puppies. You don't want to elect a guy who hates puppies. And this girl, like, I love puppies. Like, that's the next thing. But this woman, she hates it. You know, on and on and on. Like, it's just fear-inducing. Like, if you elect this person, the worst thing possible you can ever imagine is going to happen. Right? Fear is the great motivator of our generation. Like, it's the, like, if you let your kids do this, then the worst thing ever is going to happen. Like, that has been one of the biggest motivators as a parent, almost. It's like, is my kid going to grow up to be, like, mentally deranged because I let him do this one time? It's fear. Like, I see this in myself. Like, even when I start to discipline my kids, like, in my mind, I'm like, I'm just going to tell them once. If they don't listen, then we'll get in trouble. But it's like 4 or 5 times I'm trying, like, I told you, you better not. What I'm wanting them to do is I want them to fear me enough to stop what they're doing. Here, the fear of God's justice hit home in a powerful way, and they took it seriously. They took God's judgment seriously, that He hated their sin. But then secondly, they also took God's mercy seriously. Look at verse 7. "And this is the king. He issued a proclamation and published through Nineveh, 'By the decree of the king and his nobles, let neither man nor beast, herd nor flock, taste anything. Let them not feed or drink water, but let man and beast be covered with sackcloth, and let them call out mightily to God. Let everyone turn from his evil way and from the violence that is in his hands. Who knows? God may turn and relent and turn from his fierce anger so that we may not perish." Their only hope was that they could cry out to God and that He would relent. Like, do you notice that they did all of these things? Sackcloth and ashes, fasting before God, not knowing if he would actually give mercy to them. They did not have in their mind, hey, if we do A and B, then we'll get C. They were like, all of their mourning was actually because they realized they were sinful and that they deserved judgment. But now, in their mourning, they're crying out to God, hoping that God is really, truly merciful. They're taking his mercy seriously. Like, this is one of the most powerful nations in the world at the time. It would have been very easy for them to kind of rise up in pride and swagger and just get angry at Jonah. To get angry at God. Like, who are you to come in here and tell us that we're going to be destroyed? Do you not know who we are? It could have been easy for them to plunge into utter despair. To do sackcloth and ashes, but just to mourn and never call out to God at all. And just believe that it's coming. But they didn't either. They sought God's mercy because they took his mercy as seriously as they took his judgment. Like, one of the reasons that I think we struggle to see revival in our own lives, to see revival in our communities, is that we fail to take God seriously in both of these ways. That if we take God seriously, we would see serious change in our lives. And in the lives of those you love, in the lives of those you're praying for, in the lives of those who live down the street from you, if they begin to take God seriously, if they begin to believe that he is a God who is just and also a God who is merciful, this ignites in us. Like, it just creates a spark in us that begins to radically transform our mind. And what happens, though, when that is not happening, when we're not seeing revival, we can usually point back and go, okay, they're not taking God seriously. They're not truly believing in God's character, or maybe they've been misinformed. There's a lot of misinformation about who God is. First of all, we kind of have to see where we're at personally, don't we? Do you take God's judgment seriously? When we don't take God's judgment seriously, you don't take your sin seriously. And when you don't take your sin seriously, you don't see your need to ask for forgiveness or to change at all. So maybe the first question for us is, okay, how often am I actually admitting and confessing sin? When someone calls me out, do I actually see that as a sin against God? Or is it just something to kind of smooth over? And just like, my greatest aim in this is just to make everything okay. And make the person next to me like me again. David in Psalm 51, after sinning against Bathsheba and her husband, says, God, against you and you alone have I sinned. He understood that even though he committed adultery with this woman, even though he had her husband murdered, which is a crazy story if you've never read it, 1 Samuel chapter 12, or 2 Samuel chapter 12, rather. He understood that the root of it was he did not take God seriously, and he went and acted on his own accord. Where are you in that? Like, here's the reality. We're raised in a culture that values grace because we're raised in a Western culture. The Western culture has been shaped by the Christian church, for good and bad, if you want to go that way. But we live in a culture that very much values mercy and grace and tolerance, and I firmly believe you can trace all that back to the doctrines of the church. Our first founders in this country, especially, were Christian men and women seeking religious freedom and asylum. And so we're all raised in that culture. That's the air that we breathe. But it's not really, if you were to go and start talking to some of our Southeast Asian immigrants and neighbors or some of our Middle Eastern neighbors, you would actually see that for them, the thing that they cling to is not so much grace, but justice. Like, the idea of karma itself is an idea that bleeds out from justice, that you get what you deserve. And so there's just kind of, and I say that because sometimes we don't even understand the kind of culture and air that we breathe today is that we are so naturally inclined to mercy. And because of that, whenever we hear about God's justice and judgment toward our sins, it can be very revolting to us. Because we want to believe that we're okay the way we are. We want to believe that we're good, or at least that we're better than most people. I mean, I'm better than the person down the street. I'm better than this person in my class. I'm good. Like, that's usually the MO that we have. And when we start to feel guilty or we start to feel bad about ourselves, we start to kind of trace in our mind, okay, this is how I'm still good. And what happens is, for a Christian, for someone who calls himself a follower of Jesus, who doesn't take God's judgment seriously, what ends up happening is they're usually the person who ends up bending on the hard parts of the Bible. They usually take it upon themselves to make the faith attractive by erasing parts of the Bible that they don't like or they think other people don't care for. We've seen this a lot in the last few years as there's divisions in the church on sexual identity and gender issues. Do you take God's judgment and His justice seriously? I mean, but on the other hand, we have to admit that sometimes we don't take His mercy as seriously as we should either. And therefore, we don't really take change seriously. And here's what I mean by that. Is for a lot of us, we don't believe that change is truly possible, either in us or in others. Like there's a famous saying, like people never change, or once a, you know, fill in the blank, always a fill in the blank. Like, and we begin to say that about ourselves or about people who've hurt us in the past. I mean, isn't that what we've seen in this kind of era of social media justice, that people who are being found out, oh, they did this thing 20 years ago, they must still be the exact same person they are then, today. So therefore, let's villainize them and just crush them. That's not to say the things they did 20 years ago aren't worthy of justice, but it's character assassination, and it is a denial of the fact that people change and can change. And it's really a showcase that we don't take seriously the mercy of God, especially when it arises in the church. Like, on a personal level, it just gets horrible. Because we condemn ourselves constantly. In every dark situation we find ourselves in, we look for the things that we did to cause it. As if somehow God is punishing me for my sin by making my life miserable. I'll fully and freely admit that that's my MO. Life starts going bad, my default mode is to go, okay, God, did I cause this? And maybe I don't ask it point blank, but I start to like review my last week and like, man, you know, if I did this and this and this, then things will get better. Like, that's usually how I know that I'm operating out of a place where I'm not really taking God's mercy seriously. That I think that the way to fix it is to actually do something and be a better person. As if, but that's not how God operates. God's mercy is more serious than that. It is more relentless than that. It is far more covering than that. As a song we sang earlier says, our sins, they are great, but His mercy is more than that. Like, the Christian who doesn't take God's mercy seriously oftentimes takes themselves too seriously. They're inflexible, they're judgmental, they can't laugh at themselves. And every bad situation in their lives is tied to something they did. And what's worse, as bad as they are to other people, they're just as bad to themselves internally. They are horrible people to hang out with. I'll freely admit, I'm sometimes a horrible person to hang out with because I'm just like sulking in the corner and I can't hide it. I wear my emotions on my face. I mean, as we walk through these two issues, which seems to stick out to you the most for yourself? Do you find that you tend to not take God's justice seriously, or that you tend to not take His mercy seriously in your life? Do you tend to take your sin too lightly and just kind of like flippantly, like, I just don't care? Or do you just tend to go to believe that there's really no sense in our power of transformation in you or for others? Do you give up on yourself too easily? Like if we had a Venn diagram, if you know what those are, like a Venn diagram, you have one circle here and one circle here, and here's mercy, here's justice, and you move them together. And then there's this middle part where they meet. The Christian life is spent in this middle part where both mercy and justice meet. And your whole Christian life is spent God pulling you into that middle part. Whenever you begin to lean too harsh on yourself and too hard on yourself, God is pulling you to mercy. And whenever you begin to be too flippant about your life, God is pulling you to justice. He is constantly pulling us to the middle of the diagram. And this is just who God is. One of my favorite verses in the Bible is actually the verse that the Bible quotes the most within the Bible. It's Exodus 34, verses 6 through 7. And I would say, and I would greatly encourage you to memorize it. Here's what it says. Just listen to the character of God. The Lord passed before Moses and proclaimed, the Lord, a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness, keeping steadfast love for thousands, forgiving iniquity and transgression and sin, but who will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children and the children's children to the third and the fourth generation. Do you see the Venn diagram there? That first half is awesome. Abounding in mercy, forgiving thousands. Sometimes some translations say thousands of generations. But then you have this other circle where he is also a God who does not clear the guilty. We must see that God hates our sin. And that if we don't mourn it, we don't recant it, he has every right to judge us. Because you and I have been created to live in this life in relationship with him, completely dependent upon him. And when we do that, when we love God with all that we are, it actually overflows into our love for one another. If you go back to Genesis 1 and 2, you'll see this perfect relationship with God, perfect relationship between man and woman, perfect relationship between us and the world. Everything is flowing as it should be because everything is ordered. But then in Genesis 3, what happens? Humanity decides we want to be our own God and we rebel. And everything fractures. And in fact, the rest of the Bible, you can see it, is this story of God going, okay, I'm going to restore everything back to Genesis 1 and 2. And so in his justice, everything that is destroying us, everything that is destroying our relationships, everything that is destroying our world, God, as a just God, will destroy himself because he is looking and working toward restoration of all things. And for those of us who continually hold on to our sin and continue to push God to the side, we will eventually choose to be an enemy of God forever, and he will judge us and destroy us, and we will be separated from him for eternity. That is hell. But God is also merciful. And for us who are followers of Christ, those two circles of justice and mercy meet in the person of Jesus. For the Christian, what we see in Jesus is this full picture of God's justice and his mercy. When you read the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you read the life of a man who never sinned. He was completely just in all of his interactions. And everything he did in his relationship with God, it was perfect. His relationship with other people was perfect. His relationship to the creation, perfect. No sin. But yet we still see him dying a gruesome, horrific death. And he said he did this, that the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for the many, for you and I. In the death of Jesus, we see God's mercy toward us in that His Son willingly came into our world to die the death that you and I deserve. Your and I sins, all the ways we've hurt one another, all the ways that we've rejected God, has earned us God's anger and wrath because it has tore apart the fabric of His design for you and for the world. But Jesus chose to step in front of that and to bear all of that for you. See, the agony of the cross isn't merely found in the physical pain and torture that Jesus endured. But it's actually summed up in the cry, my God, why have you forsaken me? God deserted His Son on the cross in order to judge and punish Him for our sins. The separation you and I deserve, Jesus experienced in that moment. Jesus, the one who has always been one with the Father, has always had connection with God, for the first time and only time in history, is separated. Out of mercy for you, so that God could show you His kindness and compassion to you in your sin. But we also see in that the mercy of God, but the justice of God. That God, being a just judge, doesn't just ignore your sin. He doesn't ignore the ways that you've hurt people. He doesn't ignore the ways you've lied to yourself. He doesn't ignore all the times that you said that He was stupid or you thought you were better than He was or you kind of pushed Him away. He has to, as a just judge, do something about that. And in His justice, He does something about that through the death of Jesus. Every single one of us will face God at one point after our death, and we will look at Him, and someone will take the punishment and the blame and all the penalty for our sin. It will either be Jesus or it will be us, but it's not getting wiped clean for no reason at all. God is not merely tolerating our sin. He wants to do something about it. The Apostle Paul puts it like this in Romans chapter 3. He says, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. That's like a duh statement, right? And we are justified, that's made right with God, declared innocent with God, by His grace as a gift, through the redemption that is in Jesus, whom God put forward as a propitiation by His blood to be received by faith. That word propitiation is a long word that means God's atoning sacrifice. It is a sacrifice that absorbs and curbs the wrath of a God. It was a word that Paul used and brought in from other religions at the time because he wanted people to get the point that God, that Jesus not only died as a symbol, He didn't die as just merely as an example, but He died as a substitutionary sacrifice for you. So that you can be declared innocent. So that you can walk into the court guilty as guilty can be. All of your sins, all of your crimes listed out for the world to hear. And for God still to bang down the gavel and say you're innocent. Because the debt's been paid. Somebody else settled the charges. When we look at Jesus, we see that the judgment of God toward us, as well as the mercy of God for us. We see that while we are so sinful that God's own Son had to come and die in our place, we are so loved that God's own Son willingly took our place for us. And when we take that seriously, we will see serious change in us. Like this is why Christians, this is why the church can be such a huge instrument of change in our world. One, because we're not scared of the results of an election. We have a just God who is sovereign over all things, and He's working all things for His good. We're good. We know that we can absolutely be clearly honest and vulnerable with others, because no matter what comes out of my mouth about how bad I am, none of it condemns me. We know that as sinful as we are loved, and that is a humbling thing. And it humbles us to actually care about and love and be compassionate to people who have hurt us, or maybe have different political opinions than us, or maybe look differently than us, or even come from a different religious background than us, because we know that God loved us while we were His enemies. It also gives us great confidence that the gospel that saved a wretch like me can save anybody I meet. Because His mercy is more than our sin. This empowers us to be generous with our time, with our efforts, with our money, with our gifts. Because we know that we have been saved to something far better than the material possessions of this world. And we don't have to prop ourselves up anymore. It empowers us to fight the injustices that God hates. As His Spirit, which was given to us, not only because Jesus died, but He rose from the dead and has knitted us to Himself and His new life. That same Spirit lives in us. And so the injustices that God hates, we hate. And we are now moved for social change. When we begin to take God seriously, it produces this serious change in us. So my question is, do you take Him seriously? One of my favorite stories of this kind of transformation has actually happened to a man named John Newton. John Newton was a slave trader back in the 1600s. He was a British man, and he was a slave captain. And so what he would do is he would captain these boats from West Africa back up to England. And he would just load them up with slaves. That was his job. That's how he made his money. That's how he made his living. And then one trip on the way back to England, a storm comes up, kind of like the story of Jonah in chapter 1. Storm comes up, and he thinks he's going to die. And he begins to cry out to God. He begins to cry out to God for mercy. He begins to cry out to God to save him. And God, the storm actually begins to relent, and the ship doesn't go down, and he makes it back to dry land. And he knows without a shadow of a doubt that God heard his prayer. And he begins in that moment to begin to read the Bible, to begin to study it, to begin to be changed by it. And over time, he comes to see that his slave trade that he was involved in is an evil. And he actually partners with a man named William Wilberforce to help end the slave trade in Great Britain. He quits his job, and then perhaps one of the most famous feats that he's known for, one day he sits down and writes the hymn, Amazing Grace. And that line, "Who saved a wretch like me," takes on new meaning when I know that this guy used to deal in selling people for profit. If God can reach a man like John Newton, He can reach the drug addict down the street. God can reach a man like John Newton. You ain't got nothing to be worried about God reaching you with His mercy. Because His mercy is more than our sin. I mean, His mercy should create in us not just this lightness that, oh, I just get to do whatever I want, but a seriousness that I can be different, that who I am walking into the room this morning, by the power and mercy of God, I am not condemned to be forever. That I, like the Ninevites, can take seriously changing and repenting and relenting of my sin and turning to God, and He will meet me there with His mercy, and He will lift me up. And you know what? In His mercy, you may still fall, but He will always pick you back up.
It's like the song we sang earlier, His faithfulness is great to us. The God who saved you by His mercy will now not condemn you because you can't put it all together. For God to give up on you, for God to deny you, for God to leave you where you're at and just wipe His hands clean of you would be for God to be, for the first time in His life, unfaithful to one of His children. God would have to cease to be God to let you down. His mercy is more. So in taking God seriously, not only do we hate our sin and we fight and we war against it and we make plans to conquer it, but we also take His mercy seriously. So we don't have to take ourselves so seriously. So we don't have to be stressed out and overwhelmed all the time. That we can know and have not just confidence, but just certainty that God is for me, that He loves me, that He is worthy of my trust because He is relentlessly merciful. So how does that work out for you personally? For us to become a people that take God seriously in your pursuit of Him. I mean, part of it is what you're doing this morning, just committing to be in worship with other believers of Jesus. Or if you're at that point where you just don't know where you're at, committing to be around other people who actually love Jesus. Like, not just in word, but you can actually see that they're serious and they do some weird things because they think Jesus wants them to. Like, they actually love people who are different than them. And you just kind of latch on to those people. And you hang on to them. You open your Bible and you just can make a commitment. I'm going to read consistently every day, at least a paragraph. And I'm just going to see what God has to say to me. I'm going to try to pry out from this the nature and character of God this morning. I mentioned it before, but we have a Bible reading plan. If you want access to that, I have a PDF. I can just email it to you. I can print it out for you. People who take God seriously are people who take prayer seriously. I'm not talking about high and lofty, grandiose, like big-worded type of prayer. I'm talking about they actually believe God hears them, so they talk to Him. They believe that God will forgive them, so they actually admit their sin to Him. In everyday plain language, you don't have... Like, there's patterns of prayer in the Bible, but God's mercy is more than you messing up the pattern. Just talk to Him. And then there are people who together, corporately, begin to take God's mercy seriously. And they begin to not only in their worship together on a Sunday or their meeting and gathering together during the week in our gospel communities, but in the way that we now look outward at the community beyond us. God has been compassionate and kind to us, and then that shapes the way that we're kind and compassionate to others. You can look on the back of your loop. There's the coat and jacket. We're raising those things for class at elementary. We're not doing that just so we can actually say, hey, we're doing something good. But because of the kindness and compassion of God, He has clothed us with His own righteousness. And there are kids in this neighborhood who don't even have a jacket to wear in 30-degree weather. Surely I can clean out my closet. Or surely I can pay a couple of dollars at the thrift store to make sure a kid down the street has a coat to wear to school. It's the least we can do, right? It's the reason we come alongside other ministries like Elias and do the toy store. Not so we can pat ourselves on the back, because we know what it's like to be in need. We know what it's like to have our greatest need, our need for restoration and relationship with God met by the love and mercy of God Himself. So we're not going to force a mom or a dad to choose between a light blue and presents. We're going to help them out. And we're going to also do it in a way that maybe helps keep their dignity intact. Like, I was a kid in school that got called to the office at Christmas time to give clothes and presents to take home. And I know how that made my dad feel. So by having mom and dad pay a couple of dollars for a toy, we can actually help restore their dignity that they are actually the ones providing the gifts for their family, just at a discount. We get to be a part of that. We get to be God's hands and feet, mercy and compassion and kindness to others through these ways. Let's just embrace them by taking His mercy seriously. And that, more than an election, more than political activation, us being like that to people around us today and every day, that is what will make transformation in the Northeast. That is how we'll see transformation in our city. That is what will create lifelong transformations as families embrace the gospel. And then kids and grandkids and great-grandkids are raised up in homes that love Jesus. So let's take God seriously, and let's produce, because it produces serious change in us. Let's pray.